This is Educating Technology, a podcast about using technology in our schools. I am your host, Matthew Lanier, and I'm joined by the man who has rescued me with problems with my sip trunks, Chris Fikes. Hello, Chris.
How are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing a lot better now that my sip trunks seem to be working a little bit better, so that's always good.
Yay, sip. And you got to experience some of that internet background radiation, too,
oh,
didn't you?
Oh, man, just internet garbage is what that is. And I'm working on implementing a solution for it, but I'm a little bit uneasy about doing it because I don't know what it's going to break, and I haven't gotten confirmation from anybody as far as on a couple things as far as what the sip trunks are actually doing, so I'm a little concerned about it, but
I think from looking at things, yours is proxied, so.
Yeah, so I think if I just lock it down by IP address. But my SIP trunks, we moved to SIP from an IP Flex, which in a way is kind of SIP and old school mixed together because the phone calls are still kind of going over an internet connection, but they're not. It's just an older technology, but SIP is sending them all over the internet. And I was having some problems with the registration to the SIP trunks provider just dropping because we were doing registered SIPs. And apparently there's two ways to do SIP trunks. You can do registered or you could do unregistered.
Yeah, and registered's just generally a bad idea. But
yeah.
Sometimes providers like to put a username and password on there, but at the same time, the way SIP registration works is you can get kicked off from somebody else trying.
Yeah. I'm hoping that that's not going to be a problem for us, but we shall see, because moving to unregistered from registered does seem to have made things a little bit more stable. So we're going to run with that for a while and see how that goes, because it was just a headache, man. The phones would just go out, and it's really weird. It's like sometimes you would try to make a phone call, an outside phone call, and you would just get like a busy tone even before you were finished dialing the numbers. And then, like, if you're trying to call in, the calls wouldn't make it. And sometimes you would hang up the phone and then try to make the outside call again, and it would go through. But in other times, it would take a while for like it to work again. It was like the registration was taking a while, and so. This is just one solution to see if they do drop, if I go unregistered, then they won't have to have that time to register again. So, and I know that we've had some issues with our ISP lately as far as with some cut fiber and stuff, and that doesn't help.
That doesn't help sell an internet solution, does it?
No, not at all. And so, so we've just been having some struggle with the phones, and it's pretty much to the point it's like, you know what? We need to get this fixed, or we might be polishing a resume. Because, like, phones are
resume
important.
Resume generating events are never fun.
Yeah, phones are important. They're not important to me because I don't like phones, and I think phone calls are terrible. But apparently, that's still a thing in this world. And until that goes away, we have to keep a phone system running. And trying to do that in a cost effective manner, because E-Rate has removed some financing and funding for phones. So now the phone system is completely on the backs of the school districts, and we're not receiving any like funds to help fund that like we do internet access, which I think is silly because phones are just as important as internet access in some instances.
Well, you got to be able to call 911. So.
Exactly. Needless to say, phones are now our problem, and so we're trying to figure out ways to do it cost-effective and move into SIP trunks, which sends out all the phone calls over the internet, is cheaper, a lot cheaper than doing it the traditional way, either with POTS lines or with a PRI or IP Flex. So we moved to that route, but then one downside is you now have that single point of failure is if your internet goes down, you can't make phone calls. So,
yeah.
But the good thing about nowadays is everybody has enough cell phones that somebody can get a call out somewhere because everybody's got cell phones. And we do have, we kept one of our POTS lines for our old faxes at the admin building as like the emergency line. It's their fax machine, but it's also like the, when I play my game and we set up defensive positions, we call it the Alamo. The last stand, and so that's where we send ours to, is that's sort of our last stand, is at the thing.
Oh yeah. And yeah, another thing, you got to keep wonderful fire systems hadn't caught up with modern technology, and they require pots. It's weird. They're supposed to have the certification come out to where they'll certify VoIP ones in 2020, but it just hadn't yet.
You know, I just, to be completely honest with you, I know that that's like required, but I actually asked like my principal, at what point does the fire system call the fire department or the alarm system?
Anytime an alarm goes off. And actually, they make, they're supposed to make an outbound call to your monitoring company every hour to submit status.
So I'm not really sure. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure you have them. You just might not know.
I mean, I know where the fire panels are, and I don't know where the phone lines are near those panels. That's my whole thing.
Oh, well, they actually get direct. You run direct wires to the boards on there.
Oh, maybe it's in the back somewhere, but I don't know, man. I've never
don't
had to
look
do
too
them.
Closely there.
Yeah, I'm just not gonna touch that. I just, maybe that's something that's always been in place, and I just don't know about it. So we'll just run with it. I'm sure, I know it has to be there, so I'm sure it is. But I know we went on a recent line canceling spree, and so I'm hoping that some of those didn't get canceled. I'm sure we would have found out by now. But
oh, I'm sure you would have.
It's just funny.
Yeah, the only reason I thought about it is because I have some wonderful kid here who's figured out that you don't have to pull the fire pull to set off the alarm. You can actually, and I don't even know if I should say this, but everybody's going to Google it now that I've already done that. So there's a little hex nut right there on the side of the handle. If you just kind of turn it one turn, it'll set it off, and you can turn it back, and it doesn't look any different.
Oh, good times.
I had 5 of them in one building go off yesterday.
Way to go, kids.
From pools. And I know it's not a mistake, because there is 3 buildings on that same loop, and there was only this one building that had issues, and nothing went in trouble, only alarm. And it's actually modulates signals to the panel that something happened, so it's not just a mechanical something happened. No, it actually had to send the proper signal.
Wow, kids are smart, but it would be good if they can
headlock.
If they can support SIP, and then I guess, what do you do at that point? Do you just plug in a network cable to the back of it?
One of the things they are certifying is not only you can hand off by a SIP, but they're also certifying cellular. So a lot of that's probably how most of the companies will go, is they'll just put a cellular modem in there on the carrier that works, so it doesn't have to have anything in your system.
I know. Wouldn't that be the smart thing to do? I mean, that's what home security people are doing. I mean, like
Vivint
and stuff, they're putting cellular chips in them.
Yeah, enterprise fire stuff is catching up. It's just much slower because, well, yeah, government.
Money, yeah. they can milk some money off of it. But we had an open house last night, a community-wide open house.
How'd that go?
It went well at the elementary.
So how'd the high school go?
There was about 10 people. I mean... but they did it not just, it was open for like the entire community, whether you had a kid here or not, because it was sort of a come see the progress that's been happening in the buildings and stuff like that. So I'm kind of a little disappointed not a lot of people showed up at the high school, because out of all the buildings, this is the one that had the most transformation in one of the buildings here. But we'll see. I think it'll be all right. So. But it was interesting. Everything was like getting cleaned up and had to make it look pretty. And it's like, why don't we do this all the time? I mean, come on. Let's just keep it
Let's
clean.
Just make the place look clean.
I mean, the junior high principal sent out an email and said, pick up your rooms before open house. And I'm like, you should be picking up your room every day. Every day, pick up your room.
Now, you and I both know better.
I know. I'm even in the same victim. It's like it took me a whole day to clean my office. A whole day. Because it was just so bad, and I'm still not
a little backed up.
I'm still not completely done. It's like right now I'm still covered in plastic because I'm still waiting on ceiling tiles to come in. So it's like I'm working around.
That's been what, 2 weeks of plastic now?
Yeah, something like that. So I'm working around plastic, but
well, plastics make it possible.
Yes, and so I'll just feel bad about when I have to throw it away and how it has to go to the landfill, ruin the environment. But that's okay. Maybe
you should just burn it.
I'll repurpose it.
Just burn it.
Yeah.
Who cares about the black smoke?
But, yeah, so it's been sort of a sort of been a slow week this week, gearing up for open house, doing some last minute projects, hung another TV on the wall in the front lobby area of the high school renovation part to do our Chromebit digital signage thing like we're doing over by the cafeteria. So that's pretty fun. It's we bought a Roku TV, and so I connected the Roku to Amazon Skills, and so I'm able to automate that TV with my Alexa stuff, like I'm doing the cafeteria of Vizio TVs. So that's very helpful to be able to turn them on and off on their own every day. So
hey, that's awesome,
because I'm sure I'll have to go down there with some black electrical tape and kill the infrared receiver on that thing too eventually. So it's just a matter of time. And when you have to when you remove the remote out of the picture, it sort of makes it difficult to turn things on and off without going up to the TV and physically pushing the button,
which is just annoying because they try to hide buttons now and you never know which one's actually what.
I know all the buttons are like behind the TV, and so you have to like get behind it to see the button, and it's like the Vizios, I know it's the top button because I've had to push it so many times, but it's like they put like a little texture on the back of it. Well, some TVs putting texture on all the buttons, and so it's like, how can you tell?
Which defeats the entire purpose.
I know.
Why do companies? Oh, one button that feels like this is great. Well, let's make all five of them. It's got to be even greater.
Yeah. So, but it's I can open the app on my phone and be like, Amazon, turn on the high school, and it'll turn on high school on. It'll turn all the TVs on. I could say turn on cafeteria, and it'll just turn the TV that's in the cafeteria on and off. And then the same with, like, I'll say, like, 200, and it just does that one in the 200 building. So anything that I can automate to make things a little bit easier is better, because I was so glad when Vizio added the Alexa integration so I can automate it, because it was such a hassle. And sometimes you get busy and I don't go turn on the TVs, and somebody's like, well, why aren't the TVs on? It's like, well, you're perfectly capable of going to turn the TVs on too.
So walk over there and push the button.
Yeah. So it was just taking the remote out of the picture was kind of a headache, but thanks to the glories of automation, I don't have to worry about it. So now I just need to figure out how I can get my Roku TV into my HomeKit. I think it's coming eventually, like built into Roku, but I want to do it now. So I can have iOS do it, as opposed to having to have the Alexa app on my phone, because I don't really want it there. Actually, I only install it whenever I need to do something like manually to it, and after that delete it, because I don't want anything with the potential with microphones listening on my phone that's not...
Yeah, like Siri?
Yeah, like Siri. It's bad enough Siri's on there, but I don't want Alexa listening too, so... But so how about you? How's life for you over there? You having a slow week, busy week?
We'll say busy week. We had some Telpass testing this week, Star Alt 2 and those kind of deals. This was the last week to get that done. So if you're listening to this and you hadn't done it, I'm sorry. You missed it.
Yeah, we did. We did Telpass, I think, last week or the week before. Right when the window opened, I think we did it. And we have EOC testing starting next week.
Yep, we do too. And that's why I now know how to put the fire panel in walkthrough mode.
So it doesn't go off during the
It won't
testing.
Go off.
So that's
sorry cool. If the building catches fire. But no, we're not going to set alarms off, kids.
Yeah, that's probably...
I do have you some AMD news. It's been a while since I've done that.
What are they doing? Are they releasing something new? Releasing something old?
Lisa Su is actually going to give the very first ever pre-show keynote for Computex this year, which is interesting that they're creating a whole new keynote position for her. And the title of it is The Next Generation of High-Performance Computing. So I do believe that we're going to get our Rome launch and our Matisse launch and possibly Navi launch.
Sweet. I know you've been waiting on that Navi card.
Yeah, and I'm probably, no offense, AMD, I'm probably going to be have too hyped and let down again like with Vega, but it is what it is.
They'll get it right eventually. They'll get it right.
No, they just don't have the money. You can't do both GPUs and CPUs unless you're as big as Intel, and they're just not there yet.
Yeah.
But the numbers are starting to leak out for some of the Epic CPUs, and it's incredible. I mean, the 64 core chips with 2.2 base gigahertz whatnot on a server is incredible.
Yeah.
And they're moving to intercommunication over PCI Express, which is neat.
It's interesting.
I think Intel will follow suit quickly, but yeah.
Anything to make things faster, right?
Anything to make it, well, faster and cheaper. Cheaper.
Cheaper.
No specific architecture needs.
Well,
because
you
they
know,
have so many PCI Express lanes in their CPUs, they can just burn them at will.
Well, you know Intel's not going to follow the cheaper path, but...
Well, they're going to start... They're gluing their own together now. I mean, they did release their 56-core Xeon this week.
Wow. So. It's just amazing. I'm actually looking at new servers. And just seeing all the processor options that you can put in those things, it's like 8-core, 12-core, 16-core, 24-core. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I think you should go for the 56-core.
Oh, dude, I can't afford it. I can barely afford what I'm getting.
Here, let's see how much they, what they MSRP'd that thing. It's not as much as I thought they were going to MSRP it. Well, that one's refurbished.
Oh, well, we don't want refurbished. We want brand spanking new.
We ain't new. Platinum 9200. Let's see. MSRP. I love it. Dude, this is hilarious.
Call for
so I'm
pricing.
Looking at the MR. No, it just has a dollar sign and it says mini.
Really?
Like, yeah, hold up. I got to screenshot this one to send to you so you have it for the notes. This is good stuff.
Mini. Is it from like Intel's website or somebody else?
No, no, this is not Intel. Intel won't put an MSRP. Many.
Many. Yeah, that's funny. I'll have to add that in. But it's crazy, man.
Oh, there it is. Hold on. The base model comes in at $10,009.
Oh, yeah, that's...
Just for the CPU.
That's over the budget that I have to buy a single server, so I'm not going to be able to do that. But yeah, so nothing like quoting out new servers and looking at all the processors and trying to make decisions on
I never what your did needs get to are. Convince you to go Epic, did I?
Just gonna stick with the Intel stuff, man. I don't know. It'd probably end up being a little cheaper, but working with a third party person to sort of get the quotes and the pricing and hoping to get it where I want it. So I am excited about doing it. This is gonna be my Hyper-V migration. Getting new servers, it's going to force me to actually figure out my migration problem, or I'm just going to be standing everything up from scratch, brand new.
Nah, you can just P to V the VMs still.
Yeah, probably.
And it works
probably
just fine.
Do that. I know I'll do like new domain controllers and things like that to move to 2019, because I'm still not brave enough to do a 2019 upgrade on top of a 2016 machine. In theory, it should go just fine, but...
Oh, it does.
I'm just... But my server names are also like... have 2016 in the name, and so...
Now you can rename them.
I don't want to go through all that trouble with a domain controller.
Yeah, it does. It is a fun little process to clean up, but it does work.
Yeah, but so I'll just stand up new, and I'll have OISD-2K19. I don't know why I put the K instead of a zero, but it just looks better, in my opinion, than 2019. Just put 2K19. Hey.
I do have a recommendation for you. It's a kind of a quality of life improvement.
What's that?
With servers, creating alias names.
Alias names?
Yes. You can actually have multiple names on the same server and then both be valid for like SMB and certificates and whatnot. So you can, on the back end, have your server say, because you do the naming thing kind of like I do. I do like server W for Windows, and then I put the year of the server, like 19 for 2019. And then the job of the server. But you can throw an alias in there of, say, an example of my print server here. The server's real name is SRV-W19print. But there's an alias in there just called print. So a user can type in the word print, and it brings up the print server.
And where do you set these aliases at?
Oh, it's in the net command.
Oh, fancy that. I'll have to look into that.
That's fancy. And it lets you... Now, you can't have the same alias on two different machines, but it does let you have an alias on one. So, let's say when you wanted to upgrade servers later, you wouldn't have to change the user's workflow. You could just move the alias.
Yeah, that's sort of what I'm doing with file sharing now, using everything to the whack domain /shares.
Yeah.
What's that? DFS? DRFS?
Yes, sir.
Something like that?
DFS.
DFS. That's essentially the same thing, in a way. So I can just change things on the back end and nobody's none the wiser. So
yeah, Yeah, but aliases will help you, and they'll make that a little easier. Now, I've done some things in the past that Microsoft says, no, please don't do that. Disabling name verification for SMB. That way I could have two print servers stood up with the exact same alias name.
Mm-hmm. That's fun.
So you have load balancing.
That's the one thing I dread moving is the print server. And it's
because printers are straight out of the pits of...
Yeah, and so it's running on 2012 R2, so it's time to... I didn't ever move it to 2016. I just didn't even bother. It's like, with print servers, I've learned... And this is the fourth iteration of a print server at this school. I did two. I know somebody else did one, and then this is the fourth one. But it's just crazy. Once you get a print server that actually works, you don't touch it at all. And I'll have a lot of stuff to move. I'll have like the paper cut stuff to move. Luckily, I've moved all the Google Cloud printing to native Chrome OS printing, so I don't have to worry about moving all that mess. Because cloud printing is just a disaster. I think it's probably works fine for home use, but at a school, it's just terrible.
Yeah, it's how Google is. I mean, they just kind of create something and then abandon it.
Yeah, and so the main thing is I got to move the paper cut stuff, and then setting up the printers is not a big deal. You just have to pull a list of everything you got, and for the most part, Windows will find its own driver.
There is a print server migration tool Microsoft creates.
I know, and how well has that ever worked for you?
As long as it wasn't like a UDF driver, it seems to have worked okay.
Every time I've tried to use that thing, it has like been an utter failure.
So, just goes, bleh.
Yeah, pretty much. So probably just start from scratch on that. And then the other one that's still in 2012 that'll have to be moved is good old WSUS.
Just delete it and make a new one.
WSUS. Just shut it down and make a new one.
I mean, half the time it shuts itself down.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm excited about getting some new servers. Not getting rid of my old ones, just going to repurpose them for other things because they're still useful. I mean, they're older. I don't really want my virtualization environment running on them anymore, just in case things go bad with them. Because at some point I have to cut off renewing the warranty on them because of cost savings. So we'll just...
What are they?
They're T640s, I think.
Okay, you got some towers.
Yeah, they're tower servers, which at the time they were bought, they were to sit on like this big countertop thing. We didn't have a rack, but I've put some shelves in my rack, and so they're sitting on their sides in the rack. And what's crazy is three of my new ones, I'm looking at the R440s, so I'm actually looking at rack mounts. They're going to take up the space. All three of them will take up the same space as one of those tower servers.
Nice.
Which is good because I need to pull one out, and then I wanted to leave the other two in the rack because I'll get my imaging server off the floor. Well, it's actually sitting on some wooden boxes right now. So one of these older servers will replace my imaging server, and then one will act as like a local backup server, which it's doing now, backing up some VM stuff to the local storage on the thing as opposed to the SAN. So it's wrong, but it's still right. but we've talked about that before. So that'll be a dedicated your backup server to do those things, and then an imaging server, and then the other one will be if you can make some room for me, we'll send it over there. It was going to go to the other place you were at, but then you moved, and I'll just stick it in the floor in a corner somewhere, and it'll be an offsite.
Yeah,
backup.
There you go. I got rack room.
So I might have a shelf.
We'll put it in the rack.
I have a shelf, and then I can bring you a shelf and a tower server and take up about 8 user space. but I'm going to repurpose the old ones. So I'm going to solve a bunch of problems, do some more cost savings as I move to Hyper-V to use existing licensing as opposed to VMware. So I'll save that money.
Don't tell Dell, though.
Yeah, don't tell Dell. But I'm excited. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a new thing to learn with Hyper-V. Never really done a whole lot of Hyper-V before.
You'll actually like it.
But how hard could it be, right? It's all the same.
No,
just a point and click and install, right?
Yeah.
So I just got to figure out.
I'll tell you about that. You'll have some Kerberos delegation and some things like that to do, but it's super easy.
I got to figure out the migration process though, because the Microsoft VM converter tool just does not cut it with 6.5. I don't know. Maybe they'll release an update. Maybe I can like reach out to Microsoft or something and see, hey, is anything planned? I'd really like to do this. It's not working with 6.5 VMs. And because what is crazy is I talked to Spencer at Koontz and he did it, but he wasn't running like 6.5. I think he was only running like either 5.5 or 6. So he was able to use the Microsoft. He literally did it in an afternoon. It's like,
oh, I know. I think I was on the phone with him.
He went home. He did it, went home, set him up, came back to work, and nobody was none the wiser, and he moved to Hyper-V. Yep. So it's just, I'm hoping for the.
I gave him a really early copy of that backup script thing I wrote for it, too.
So I'm looking forward to learning all that and figuring that out. I like challenges. Just trying to have time to get it all done because we're refreshing servers, but we're also refreshing staff machines this summer, as well as the three labs we do every year. So going to have a lot of desktops to put out. Going to have three new servers to put out with the whole migration process. So for a while, I'll be running dual environments. I'll be running Hyper-V and VMware until I can get everything moved over. So I guess the main thing that I'm worried about the whole migration process is migrating those Linux VMs over.
Oh, no. All the Hyper-V stuff's integrated into the Linux kernel.
I mean, it's just because I have no GUI. And it's like, how do I do the migration tool inside of Linux?
You don't have to. So here's what you can do on your Linux ones. And it's not bad. As long as they're on not a 3x kernel, if they're at least on 4 kernels, which they should all be.
I try to keep them pretty up to date. Okay. They're not 1804 right now. I think they're still 1604s.
And that's okay as long as you're not on any 14s.
Yeah, I'm not on 14s. I'm on LTS versions, and I try to keep them up to date.
Well, cool. So here's what you do. Super easy. Download the VMDK file, and just convert it to a VHD.
Well, see, that's the problem. It's like VMware ESX 6.5, the virtual machine versions they're using, they're putting some descriptor meta tag or something.
You can use, and this is going to sound crazy, but it actually works. So if you want to go the simpler route, VirtualBox has their VBox Manager tool, which will do drive conversions. And if you want to go the more correct route, Kemu has an image drive converter too.
I might have to look into that because the solution that I'm finding is I have to run this application, this exe file on the VMDK to rip out this descriptor TXT file out of it, make a change from a 0 to a 1 or a 1 to a 0, one or the other, and then use that same tool to basically inject that text file back into the VMDK file, and it's just a little crazy.
Oh my.
So it's going to be fun.
Thanks, VMware.
Yeah. But I'm also looking into the possibility of maybe using a virtual machine manager to do some of it. Maybe SCCM can help, or System Center can help me do it. So we'll see what happens. That's really the only ones I'm worried about. All the Windows ones I probably need to redo anyway, to make sure to get them up to date with 2019. And I'm also going to take this opportunity to see if there's some things that we can scale back on. I know I did that the last time, as far as like the number of virtual machines that I have running for certain things. But some other things have gone away. And so I'm hoping that, maybe I can scale it back a little bit even more, like combine a couple of the, cause I have three application servers. One of them is for the cafeteria server. I won't be touching that one. That one will stay on its own probably. Uh-huh. Probably won't migrate that one this time. I'll probably leave that on 2016. So I'll have to get it into the Hyper-V from VMware. But the other two, I think I can consolidate the applications that are running on both of those things. So
you want to play with some containers?
Probably not.
Oh, come on now.
I'll stick with stuff that I do know for right now. I don't want to introduce too much at one time.
Do it live.
Maybe next time I'll do that. I'll play with some containers. But I'm looking forward to going to Hyper-V. I know I've said that like 15 times.
Which is really cool. I mean, because the licensing, I mean, you're actually going to get the ability to use a lot of really cool things using that license. I mean, you have the ability to use Windows Nano Server if you want. So you can actually move your application servers into Nano Server, which is a really cool little platform.
It's just
that is
I just don't see the need. PowerShell gives you all the features that I'm paying for with VMware. The only thing is, the only downside is the support. Like, part of what I'm paying for the VMware licensing every year is a support thing. Basically, mm-hmm. it's the support subscription. So that means I can get updates and I can get help if I have problems with it. And Microsoft,
yeah, you're not going to get that.
Not going to get help from Microsoft unless I pay them $500 per ticket or whatever.
Or if you sign up for a help thing and then you lose your cost savings.
Yeah. So I'll sort of be on my own at this point, but that's okay. I'll figure it out. We have a nice support group of people that can probably help me out with anything I can find.
We cry on each other's shoulders.
Yeah, it's like, what was I thinking? I should have stuck with VMware. But, you know, if push comes to shove, as I told my supervisor,
you can go back.
In the grand scheme of things, I'm saving $2,000 a year. That's sort of a drop in the bucket for us in some ways. That's not that big a deal. It's something that we're used to paying. So if I have to stick with VMware, if I would just feel more comfortable with it, that's not a problem. You know?
No. And I wouldn't hassle you too much about it.
I mean, because VMware's great. I like VMware. I love VMware. It's just that if I could save a little money, I'm going to save a little money. I mean, we switched phone providers to save $200. I mean, you switched to save a whole lot more than $200.
And that's okay.
But I mean, every little bit helps.
But I don't have anyone to call either.
Yeah. That's the downside. And so that's your catch 22, I guess. It's like you make these cost savings, but then you're on your own.
Yeah.
And so it's, you got to decide what's more important. But
I wear my floaties.
Yeah.
We're not sinking.
we'll just get into it and we'll figure it out and we'll call it a day. That's what we do. But yeah, so new servers, man, the whole process of quote new servers is such a pain, man. It's such a pain. You can't just call somebody and say, "Hey, this is what I want anymore." They want to run like these live optics on your stuff to see like what you have. And because I ran that, they saw that I had so much like internal storage. And so when they sent me the quotes, they added in all that internal storage back. And I'm like, I don't need this.
You're like, whoa, guys, that was a SAN. Leave it alone.
Well, no, I mean, my current servers do have internal storage, but they were bought before we had a SAN. So we were using them for things. I was running ESX on them before I even had a SAN. Now, it was a nightmare to try to do a lot of things with it. But I was doing it, and so I'm like, I don't need this. So I'm going to save $2,500 just in hard drives from their original quote because, man, they quoted some hard drives, man. Those some intense hard drives. They quoted like 900 gig SAS drives spinning at 15,000 RPM. I'm like,
it's one of those drives you hope the platter doesn't fly out of the server because you're going to lose a leg.
Yeah, because I mean, it's like, wow. I mean, if you're going to get physical hard drives, those are some of the ones to get. But I'm like, I don't need them. Take them all out. And they put 8 of them in there. I'm like, what is this for? I even told them I was having a SAN. But, you know, the thing nowadays is to go to hyperconverged. I'm just a holdout. I don't want to do it. I still want individual parts. I don't know why. I just just want them all separate to reduce points of failure, I guess. I just old school mentality. I still have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that I got to go to IP6 at one point.
Or you are creating a single point of failure with your SAN.
Probably are. you're probably exactly right. If the SAN
but
goes,
that's just mean to think about.
Everything
Let's
goes.
Not think about that.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. You just ruined my Friday. I've got to change out a switch in our stack this afternoon. And so now that's probably going to be a catastrophic failure for me because you said something. And so
sorry,
it's fine. I've got the switch sitting on the floor. Just got to put the right OS on it so I don't have to waste time for the stack to update it itself. Plug it in, hope it all works. So in theory, that's what it should do. That's what it did the last time I had one in a stack go out. Just turned it all off, unplugged it, plugged it back in, turned them all back on, and everything was fine. It went through its little stack election stuff, and luckily it's not the master that's having problems, so I don't have to change that out. So I don't really, as long as it gets switch 4 like the old one does, it should get its config, so, and everything will be fine.
Yay.
Interesting week, man. Interesting week this week.
But thank goodness it's over.
I know, right? It's just, it's like the beginning of the week was pretty rough. I mean, it's pretty busy, like dealing with the phones and some other things that happened. Windows update killed one of the keypads on the cafeteria servers or cafeteria line computer, so just rebooting it, had to bring it back. And it's like, why does Windows update do those sort of things? I just don't understand. But
well, starting with the next the April update, you're going to get a little more control over your Windows update again.
Yeah, I hope so. Or if they would just log off the machine and it would just reboot itself.
You should just force it to log off in the afternoon.
Well, I know. There's a lot of things I should do, but
I got a list of those over on my whiteboard.
Yeah, I put on Twitter that I was going to yesterday. I put on Twitter that I was going to go through my my to-do list and make sure it's all up to date because I hadn't looked at it in a while. Didn't even have time to do that yesterday. It's still on the.
You didn't put it on your to-do list.
Didn't put it on my to-do list to go over my to-do list. Not that I would have checked the to-do list to see that I needed to go over the to-do list. But yeah, but the end of the week kind of slowed down a little bit, and now it's just now we're under a time crunch to get all this stuff turned in time for to get the funding in line for like new servers and stuff. So we got to get 3 quotes. So got to talk to 3 different people about the same thing. So hopefully, I can take what the first person gives me, rip out the prices, send it to the next person, and say, "This is what I want quoted." that's the intention. Send them what somebody else sent me. But yeah, but that can be our show for this week. You can send us any questions or comments or concerns to educatingtech@gmail.com. We're on Twitter with Educating Tech, and you can find a link in the show notes to join our Discord if you want to. We've had a couple people sign up talking about some Apple stuff in there, especially some follow-up from the Apple Card last week. For links and show notes for this episode, you can visit educatingtech.net/66. You can follow Chris on Twitter with @Feeks, and I'm @TwistofMatt. If you like what we're doing, you can support us by going to patreon.com/educatingtech and leave us a rating and or review in Apple Podcasts to help us grow our audience. And that's it. We'll see you next time, Chris.
I'll see you later, Matt.